What is the best that could happen? Article written and read by Heather Fisher. I've made countless trips running up and down the stairs. In the 8 years that I've lived in my home, I have endlessly traveled this path in my two-story foyer. And with every trip along this path, I find myself staring at the empty beige wall spanning the length of the staircase. Truth is, I've had a vision for this wall space since day one. I've assembled decor possibilities in my mind, including signs, picture frames, and accent pieces. Yet with each vision, I quickly tucked the ideas away with fear of the what ifs. What if the color scheme is off? What if the gallery of images doesn't coordinate with the rest of the house? What if it doesn't look good? Then, one trip up the stairs recently, I paused. I found myself thinking differently about my vision for the vacant beige space just waiting to be filled. My mind was embracing a new kind of what-ifs. What if the color scheme is spot on? What if the gallery of images coordinates beautifully with the rest of the house? What if it looks good? And then I heard Debbie Miller's phrase I proudly borrow and use when coaching teachers, the title of her 2018 text, What is the best that could happen? What is the best that could happen? With a mindset shift, I set about ordering the canvas photos to illuminate the wall and took a trip to my favorite home store to discover the coordinating accent pieces. Within a week, the once empty beige wall is now a gallery wall of beautiful memories representing my family. And now, every trip up and down the stairs, I admire the wall and think, why didn't I try this sooner? Every September, we have an amazing opportunity for a fresh start. We dream of the creative lessons that we could try. We contemplate innovative ideas for integrating technology. Instead of thinking of what might not go right with our ideas, consider the beauty that will become of them. We enter each new school year with a blank slate or beige wall. Let's not let our fear of the what ifs mask our visions for a prosperous new year. Let's take full advantage of the beauty that could be and set out to turn our instructional visions into realities. After all, what's the best that could happen?
This week, Tammy Mulligan joins me to talk about taking time to listen to readers. Tammy is an elementary teacher on an Air Force base near Boston. We discuss the features in the Free for All and Classic Classroom sections of the site. I thought Gretchen's article, Time for What Matters, that's in the Free for All section this week, really helped me just imagine or think about my core beliefs. And I thought it was really interesting the way she had sustained silent reading as one of her priorities. And then she was noticing when she was conferring with kids that that was distracting others. And so she talks about using one of her class periods for conferring.
Yeah, I thought her whole idea about that conferring needs to be planned was just so wise. How do we keep track of who we've met with and how do we like carve out days or times within each day so that we can get to kids? And I feel like, you know, I have one sheet with everyone's name on it, and that helps me to keep track of who I've seen and who I've missed. And I loved thinking about, well, do I want to spend all certain days conferring and other days with small groups, or do I want to meld those two and have a little bit of conferring and a little bit of small groups? And I thought her article pushed me to think about that a little bit.
Me too. And just how purposeful she was about thinking through ahead of time what she wanted to meet with students. It reminded me a lot of some of the things that you've written about too, Tammy, just being intentional about that time we have with kids. And so it was nice to read about it from that high school perspective.
Yeah, I laughed out loud when I read her line, you know, the quote, "Bad news, time flies. Good news, you're the pilot." I actually hadn't heard that before, and it just made me laugh and it made me smile and think about, that's right, you're the pilot. School's a starting, and you know, you really need to think about, you know, what you're doing with your time.
Exactly. Gretchen has so many of those little quips that I hear often in my mind after I've just read her articles and then I'm working with kids. You know, Jennifer Jones also has an article on the Free for All section called From Hearing to Listening, where she really zooms in on some of the, just some advice for building listening skills.
I know, I thought the way she talks about how can I be helpful, and she really separates out listening versus trying to problem solve. And she's talking about it from an adult perspective, right? When she's coaching. But boy, I thought about it with kids. You know, if you can teach kids to, even when I'm talking to them, ask, you know, do you want me to listen? Or do you want me to listen and help you problem solve this situation? But that would also be a great way for them to talk to each other, right? When they're having a problem, you know, do you need me to listen right now? Or do you need me to listen and problem solve? I just loved her language.
I did too. And when I got down near the end of the article where she's giving a few pieces of advice, I was really struck by her advice, listen like you are wrong. Maybe it's a common thing, but I don't think I've ever had somebody tell me that. And it really gave me pause because I thought about the different way that I listen if I'm wrong, and how I'm really trying to hear and see alternative views. So I like that piece of advice. The whole article is filled with good pieces, but that one definitely gave me some pause.
Me too, because you just think about when you feel wrong, boy, do you listen to every word. And just that stance, I want to remember that.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I also loved her advice, try to avoid saying something just to hear yourself in the conversation. And Tammy, when you were talking about using this article with kids and helping them build their listening skills, I was kind of thinking about how that one might play out in the classroom too.
Absolutely. And I think kids just, it's hard, right, to listen and to pay attention all the time. And I think we need to teach it a little bit more. And I think when we teach them in turn and talk and our partnerships, we want to really emphasize, I think, that listening part. Right. I think in the past, I've talked to kids more about the talking part and ways to share your ideas. And I think that's important too. But I think this year I'll spend even more time teaching kids about how to be a good listener.
It does shift the conversation a little bit. I like that idea because we do spend so much time helping kids like with their thinking stems, helping them learn how to talk as readers and writers. And it's just as important that they learn how to listen when we're communicating. So this is a great article, I think, for anybody, really any grade level, whether you're working with kids or adults, to take a peek at.
Yeah. I felt like it spanned the ages, right? There was just something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So this is listening. Then Angie Miller has an article called Making Time to Listen to Your Readers. It's an article that is full of different ways that we listen to readers. And I thought having them all together in one area would be a great way just to reflect a little bit or to start some conversations just about the different lenses and the different spaces or time in the day that we can listen to kids as readers.
You know, when you and I were going to, you know, we set up this podcast, I really thought about like verbally listening to readers, right? Hearing their voices. And as I read her article, it just made me think about yeah, all different ways that we can listen and gather, you know, data on kids and hear their voices. And I just loved how she was using surveys. You know, last year as a teacher, I did some surveys towards the end of the year, you know, and just things like, you know, it'd be a little half page sheet and I would just give a prompt, like, I want you to know, or I wish, or I hope, and, or just even an I, and then let kids have blank lines. And I felt like they just, such wisdom came out of kids. Some of the best feedback I got and how to change my teaching. And I felt like this article really reminded me that I want to do that all year.
It's true. Like you, I was thinking about the survey, just the different ways we can hear kids and find their voices, find their needs. And I appreciated the closing line of this article because she wrote, time spent listening, and she put it in quotes, time spent listening to your students during the reading workshop is an investment in your students' reading future. And it's that idea of how the workshop is this process where, you know, we're listening and we're moving forward, we're listening again, and we're taking steps towards growth. I thought it was a powerful way just to think about the workshop.
Yeah, I, you know, I've tried these ways of using, you know, something like Flipgrid. I use Seesaw, but you could use Google Classroom, where each day I have kids record themselves when they're home and they're reading. They will take it out and they will record just their thinking and they'll share it with me. And then I can comment back. And, you know, she's right. It's just the technology really helps us to listen to kids and capture their voices in ways we never had before. So I just appreciated thinking about that. Her article also made me think about using Padlet. You know, I don't want to do reading logs with kids, but boy, could kids take a selfie of themselves each week with a book that they've read? Right? And just how to kind of have these tracks there, their reading life that they could look at, reflect on, look at other kids, get some ideas for books. And, you know, her survey idea just opens up so many possibilities.
It really does. And as I was listening to you talk just about being able to hear kids' voices and hearing them, you know, in the moment. So they're at home, they finished reading their recording on Seesaw or whatever app they're in, but it's fun to listen to them. And I think we learn so much, or we discover so much that we didn't know before, because it's in that moment that they finish. And it's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable way to get to know our readers and be able to move them forward.
You know, I often just be laughing at home because they are telling me something, they're introducing me to, you know, their siblings, their dogs, then it's just, you know, you get a second of them at home and what their life is a little bit. And it just brings you closer.
Yeah, it really does. Which reminds me of Mandy Robeck's article. She's writing about one instructional strategy that really draws together a reading community. And what she's writing about is the status of the class.
I know, and I just loved her question, like, how will kids share what they're reading with each other? And just such a reflective piece about the importance of making sure that kids are sharing their reading lives and that that's intentional. And I love the way she was using status of the class to build that reading community.
Me too. And I remember reading about status of the class. Mandy's referencing it to Nancy Atwell. About how she taught us to do this quick and efficient check of where people are as readers. I don't remember reading about the responses. So Mandy sharing with us just the way she's responding to students as they share where they are, what they're reading. I thought that was wise. So she's got compliment examples, notice examples, nudge examples, questions examples. And it's these ways that Mandy responds to kids. And it's not just about her responding, but it's really about her molding a reading community that's creating interactions with kids throughout time then.
I know. I just love those. The way she laid it out was so clear, it'd be really easy to do in the room. And it just felt like to me, she was connecting kids as she was, you know, doing her status of the class, she was connecting readers and showing them how, you know, we can recommend books to each other. I just loved it.
I did too. I felt like when I read this article that it's kind of that classic choice literacy article where it's a short read, extremely influential in the practice in the classroom, and really just a simple strategy that changes the game. And Mandy writes about that, about how it's helping her kids get to know each other and become stronger readers.
Yeah, it's just, I always say it's a small move with big impact. And I love the way Mandy, you know, tweaked that status of the class to make it even more purposeful.
So we shared an article that you wrote, Tammy, about reading mats and how they build confidence. I'm excited to bring this article back and to remind members of it, because I've been thinking so much about the confidence piece of being a reader and being a writer, and how much it matters when we have confidence. When kids have confidence, it really changes the game for them. And I thought that this article is a way to be intentional about developing confidence in kids.
You know, what's funny about this article is that when I saw it and read it, I was like, oh, I remember that now. Like, I had forgotten all about it. And so I was so happy to reread it. And it was fun for me actually to reread it, because I had forgotten I wrote it. And I love these reading mats, and I use them in lots of different subject areas. I just feel like they help kids to set a goal and make a plan. And, you know, in the scheme of life, we don't all follow through on every plan we make, but I feel like it helps kids to be intentional and to have more choice. And I think when it's written down, it's just on a little piece of paper and they're circling or starring it or pointing to it, it just makes it a little bit more physical. And then it's something that they can try and do and then reflect on their learning.
Definitely. Small move, big impact. Was that the phrase that you just used?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same thing here. Just a really good way to think about supporting kids in their work as readers. I appreciate this. I'm glad you mentioned that. There's so often that I come across things on the site that I wrote and I think I don't remember writing that. And it's fun to find them again.
It is fun. Sort of like this little, you know, present that you forgot about. So I appreciate that. In Katrina's video, it just made me smile, because it's just so authentic of what happens in the room. And, you know, the kids are trying to figure something out, and she's really pushing them to be a good listener. And I love this question. She says, you know, how do you show that you're interested in what your partner says? And she's helping them to figure out how to ask each other questions, how to, you know, show with your body that you're listening. And, you know, in the end, she gets to a point where she talks to them about, you know, when we listen, do we give someone feedback right away? Or do we ask them, you know, how would they like that feedback? She actually uses the words, can you give me a tip on that word when a kid gets stuck on a tricky word? And I just love the way she's building off of what the kids are saying and doing, and getting them to reflect on how they want to be partners.
I think the video on the site is always so powerful. I love the way that I can feel I am right there alongside a teacher, and Katrina, it's almost magical the way that she works with kids. I always love coming across her videos on the site, because they're insightful, and there's nothing better than watching kids and teachers in action. And here, you're right, throughout the video, I kept thinking, oh, that's something I can say. That's just a little language shift that I can use that will help kids as they're working. It'll also help me as I'm working alongside kids.
Yeah, as I watched, I wrote down the words, you want to be interested in what your partner says. And I was like, yep, that's a wonderful way to say that. you know, would connect.
Exactly. And so true. Like, and I've just always struck, you know, like how kids, well, even sometimes adults, but how we need to learn these things. It's not like they're like, we automatically know them. It's things that we learn, as we go through life.
Yeah. And she's teaching explicitly, but, and yet, and kids are approaching it, and you know what, they're actually doing it in the video, which, and I love the smiles on their faces as they sort of realize that.
Tammy, do you have anything else that you want to say about listening to readers or things that we haven't talked about yet?
I think my biggest thing I'm thinking about, and I'm planning for the beginning of this year and thinking about September, is just making sure I'm really carving out time for kids to be reading, kids to be writing, and for me to be scooting up next to kids and into small groups and listening. And I think I want to be careful about how much I'm in the front of the room and how much I'm alongside friends. I think that's my, you know, my big takeaway after reading these is just preserving that time where kids are joyfully working and we can come up on the side and be better listeners.
Yes, me too. I was just talking with a group of teachers about that very thing, like remembering what our lives are like as readers and listening to find out what kids are like as readers and really discovering it and how joyful the work is as at the beginning of the year, as we get to know kids in all kinds of ways, but also as we get to know them as readers. And it makes such a big difference when kids discover that we're the kind of people that will listen to them and be able to teach them just exactly what they need when they need it, because we've learned to listen to them.
Yeah, I love that. I love figuring out ways to make sure that's part of my day.
Exactly. Well, I hope that this grouping of articles will help people, will help our readers do the same thing and spend some time feeling like it's not just okay to listen to kids, but it's necessary and it's an important part of the work. Because I think sometimes it feels like, you know, like that it's downtime or that we need to be moving. And sometimes the thing that's most important is when we just pause a little bit and figure out how to be present in the moment with kids.
Yeah, I feel like this combination of videos and articles you put together for the beginning of the year is just spot on to what we need to really be thinking about.
This week, our Literacy Leader members will find an article by Kathy Meir, where she provides a guide to determining the reliability of digital reading resources. She gives an excellent checklist of questions to use, as well as shares some digital resources that she finds reliable for her work. Jean Russell explains the expectations for a 6-week coaching cycle in this week's Coaching Minute video. It is filled with great ideas and one I bet you'll watch again and again. Finally, Matthew Howell offers 3 tips to help school leaders establish and achieve their goals while keeping their workload manageable. It's a great read here at the start of a new school year. If you've not had a chance to check out Matt Renwick's deep dive course about instructional literacy walks, now is a great time to look at it. Instructional walks can make a difference in the climate and in the instruction. Matt breaks down things to do, how to use them as formative visits, lead coaching conversations with teachers, and seek out promising practices. This is a great compilation of articles from the site, as well as videos where Matt walks us through step by step how to make literacy walks an important part of your day. At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it. which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.